Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Now, does it ever happen to you that a song gets in your head and you can't stop singing it? Or sometimes you change the words while you're singing it. Well, I have this song in my head, and everybody knows Sweet Dreams. I'm not going to start singing because here in here I have so much Clorox in this room that my throat isn't quite up to its normal standards. But I have been thinking of that song, or singing it actually, Sweet Dreams. But instead, I've been changing the words and saying sweet peaches are made of this. Because of my next guest, I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper an author whose book, it's so funny, I know I've read it, and I keep saying to myself, I must have read this 100 times because it's like I've known it forever. And I am so happy to welcome Kwame Mbalia to Joy on Paper. Well, and I got some music there.
Sweet dreams are made of this.
And it's sweet peaches are made of this. And the seven seas. Hey, Kwame.
Keep singing.
I've got it in my head. I've been going, well, yeah, it's so funny. Thank you, Big Ed in the control room. He works fast, doesn't he? Boy, he just pulled that up the minute I said it. What? Thank you, Ed. That song, I keep saying, Sweet Peach. Sorry, made all these. Wow, you are amazing. You are an amazing author. And of course, there are many reasons I wanted to talk to you about your books. But then, of course, you have on your website, on your menu, you have A Call for Joy. And as you know, my program is called Joy on Paper because I named it that because joy is a word that's really important to me. And I wanted people always to, you know, find that joy of writing, the joy of reading. And so when I saw that on your website, I thought, oh, what a wonderful link that we have together.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the same thing for me is when I'm, especially for that project, you know, that page references the middle grade anthology that I am editing. You know, it is super, super important that we highlight and we center and we encourage joy, especially in the middle grade space. And so I'm super excited about that project.
Well, I thought it was I love the book, of course, and the name of the new book, of course, is the Tristan Strong trilogy. And Rick Riordan was on Joy on Paper last week, and of course he is so wonderful. He's so fantastic, and what he's accomplished here, bringing out mythologies from different cultures, and your contribution here of Tristan Strong, and the new book is called Destroys the World, is just fantastic. And of course, it uses all African mythology and really bringing it into such a interesting and fascinating world that you've created.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's been an absolute blast creating and writing in this world because these are characters, a lot of the folk heroes that we read and the folk heroines and the gods and goddesses that we read about in this book, they were characters that I grew up reading about and listening to, you know, stories. And so being able to write about a young African-American boy who then encounters these, you know, characters his grandmother has told him stories about. I mean, it reminds me and it brings me back to my first time reading about John Henry or listening to the Anansi tales or reading about Burr Rabbit, and that sense of wonder and that, you know, that novel, oh my goodness, I didn't know that my culture had these characters. What else have I been missing and going to research and find more?
Well, you've done a fantastic job. And when I read the first book, which I One of the things I love about it, well, there's so many things I love about it, but the first book is called Tristan Strong Punches a Hole in the Sky. And in there you have, of course, Tristan has gone through something really horrific, and he is sent to his grandparents' farm. And being a city boy, he's from Chicago, going to his grandparents' farm in Alabama. And it reminded me of my childhood, because I had, my grandparents had a farm, and one of the absolute, my fondest memories are of that farm. And I was in Detroit and went, you know, back up north in this case. And I sometimes I wish every kid would have grandparents on a farm somewhere.
Yeah, it's, you know, this, it's a common enough, you know, scenario where you may not, you know, go to a farm, but you know, a kid gets sent to a relative's house, you know, for a week, for a couple weeks, for the summer, you know, to get away, to get a change of pace, especially if you're in the city, you know, to get out of the city, to go experience something new. And, you know, I wanted to write about that specifically within the African-American community. A lot of us with ties, you know, a lot of us Northerners or Midwesterners with ties to the South because of the Great Migration. I wanted to kind of write about that relationship and how, you know, one of the things Tristan complains about in the first book is, you know, he's like, he's worried he won't have Wi-Fi reception, or, you know, he's, when he gets there, it's like there's no street lights, and it's, you know, it's dark, and there are crickets, and it's, you know, and so I wanted to write about that familiarity that we have before Tristan plunges into the unknown.
Exactly. I thought you just drew that story so well, because it did, as I said, for me it was the same thing, that people don't understand when you use the word dark, you know, most people don't know anymore about, you know, skies that are just filled with stars, and it's just such a wonderful feeling. And of course, for me, I think fireflies were, you know, like really magical. So I and of course having grandparents, I think, is just great. And of course, particularly Nana, we have to talk about Nana.
Nana is I love Nana so much. Nana embodies, you know, she embodies, you know, that matriarch that. You know, in someone's life, it could be your grandmother, it could be your aunt, it could be your mother. It might not even be a relative of yours. It might be a friend of the family, but that person who would sit you down, who would tell you stories, who would always had something, you know, always had a story to tell about something that you might have encountered, you know. Oh, you know, I ran into, you know, I saw a bear. It's like, well, did you ever hear the story of how the bear got its fur? You know, or did you ever hear the story of why the moon's in the sky? They always have a limitless amount of stories, and there's nothing better than you sitting at her feet, sitting on the porch, listening to her tell these stories. This, you know, this is your Netflix. This is your Hulu. You know, this is your Amazon Prime. This is your HBO. This person telling you these stories were your entertainment at that age.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's wonderful to have that experience. And why don't you sort of build up the background a little bit about Tristan? We know that he's suffering now in the second book, which actually takes place right after or soon after the ending of the first book. Do you want to set up the story so you can explain a little bit more about it?
Sure. I mean, after the events of book one, where Tristan has discovered this world, discovered the folk heroes and the gods and goddesses that live within it, and he helps them to save their world. You know, Tristan, at the beginning of book two, you know, without giving any spoilers, something that I wanted to investigate is, you know, whenever you watch a movie, an action movie, or whenever you read a comic book or something, and the hero defeats the villain and saves the world, right? It's always, you know, the end of story, close the book, well done. But what I wanted to investigate is Tristan is a seventh grader, you know? He is a seventh grader going into the eighth grade. He's a child, and he's dealing with what is essentially this monumental trauma that he goes through in book one. And so in book two, one of the themes is, how do we deal with trauma, whether it is personal trauma, whether it is community trauma, or whether it is generational trauma? how do we process it? And I wanted to show, you know, several different ways, both healthy and unhealthy ways of dealing with trauma. And so Tristan, you know, there is someone in book two, we call him the Shamble Man, who has his sights set on Tristan and wants nothing more than to do away with Tristan because he feels that Tristan has wronged him. And so Tristan and the Shamble Man, they have it out throughout this book, and there we meet new gods and new goddesses. We meet new folk heroes and heroines, but we also have some old favorites returning, Ayana and Gum Baby.
Yes, I love Gum Baby. I just smile the minute I think... You've developed some wonderful characters here. I can tell you.
I can't, when I speak with children, when I speak with young readers, you know, I give my presentation, and then the first question I always get is, you know, let's talk about Gum Baby. and I'm like, you know what, that's fair. You know, I created this character and I am thrilled. I am absolutely thrilled that she has gained such a following that she has. Oh. That's what every author wants, right? They want their characters to strike a note and to resonate with the reader.
Well, yeah, you will forever be known for Gum Baby because that was really your writing is so clever. As I think, you know, in book one, everybody's saying, well, we've discovered something amazing, and it's true. You know, tell us a little bit who came out with, you were already writing, but how did this whole thing with Rick, how did you get together? Did he say, like, write this, a trilogy, or did you, how did it come about?
Well, so, you know, the Rick Riordan Presents imprint, you know, they are, centering stories by authors, writing about their different cultures, writing mythological tales and action adventures for young readers. And so I'd always wanted to tell stories about the John Henry and Anansi and Nyame, the sky god. I always wanted to tell these stories. And we heard that, you know, Rick was looking for African-American writers to tell, you know, these cultural stories. And so I mean, I couldn't. Rick has been one of my favorite authors for decades,
yeah.
And so I could not submit. Like, I had to do this. I wrote three chapters and a synopsis over the course of a week, and submitted it. And it's funny. The very first thing, I like telling young readers this too. But the very first scene I ever wrote for the first book was the Gum Baby scene, the Gum Baby introduction. And so that's what I sent off to Rick and the team, and they loved it. They loved it. They said, we absolutely love this. And all of a sudden, I had to write a whole book, and that was a completely different a can of worms.
Well, that is so exciting to be, you know, to get into the business that way. And now, of course, you've made such I think the response to your writing and the response to your stories has been so great because, well, you touch on universal themes. It's fine, you know, we're talking about African mythology and African stories, but there's still this universality. Anybody can read these, you know, everybody who reads them will have the same, I think, the same experience that I did, that you're thinking, actually, when I read it, the first one, I said, I mean, it's like I had always been reading you. It was somewhere like in the back of my mind because I just thought, this is so perfect.
Oh, thank you. I wish, you know, something I always say is that it took, for book one, it took a year and a half to write it, you know. I wrote the first draft in about 10 months or so. But, you know, as I tell young writers, you know, nothing that you write for the first time will ever be perfect. You have to rewrite and revise and edit. And sometimes it'll be just you. Sometimes you'll do it, you know, in a relationship with an editor. And so it took a year and a half, and you know, the whole Rick Riordan Presents team and the Disney Books team, you know, it was a group effort. Yeah, and they did an absolutely phenomenal job. You know, Eric Wilkerson, who is the cover artist, absolutely knocked the cover out of the park.
The covers are fantastic. Just amazing.
I will be honest with you. The first time I saw the cover for book one, I cried because it was exactly what I was looking for in this hero, in Tristan. Someone who, you know, is attacking and confronting these obstacles in front of him, while we have John Henry standing behind him, having his back, supporting him, as we adults are supposed to do for our children.
Well, and when you talk about crying, there are parts in the second book where I was crying. I really got emotional. I got emotionally involved in this story, and it was there's. Your writing is so good, and you draw us into it, and I had tears in my eyes, and then, of course, all I needed was a little bit of gum, baby, and I'd start laughing again. And, you know, just all of your characters, and in the new book, you have O'Keelboat Annie, and you are so clever. Have these characters always been in your head, like, since you were a kid, or you just came out with them suddenly? I mean, how does this miracle happen?
Well, some of them have, you know, I do remember from childhood, and in some cases it's like you know it's that vague memory you have. It's like, I remember a story where this happened, and so, you know, some research that I have to do is going to find that story and making sure that I have the basic details, but more importantly, I have the essence of the character right. Killboat Annie is one of my favorite characters in book two because of what she represents. You know, she's her honesty, her larger-than-life personality, you know, her laugh, her joy, it's so infectious. And so, but some characters are new, you know, and I wanted to bring some new characters into book two, so I had to do research into that. I had to find, you know, more stories. And the beautiful thing about folk tales and stories like that is that there's always stories, you know, in different regions that you might not have heard of, like, there is no one set of folktales for America. You can go to the South, to the East, to the Midwest, to the Southwest, to the Northwest, and find different regional folktales that you've never heard of before. And so it's so cool. Like, I love that part of my job is I get to read more stories.
Well, you know, I am so happy with this, the entire concept of writing these books for the middle grade, although I think millennials will enjoy them. Old people will enjoy them. Everybody will enjoy these books. You learn a lot. I think knowing and learning, you know, learning some mythology, learning some new things is exciting at any age. And particularly now, it's a shame. I know that, you know, if it wasn't for this mess, you would be out there with just scads of kids and going from group to group, and the kids would be sort of all over you, just, you know. And I know this whole thing is really terrible that you can't do that kind of traveling. And I know that the kids would just, well, it's like when Rick has an event. The kids go wild. It's like he's a rock star. And I think that's how they're going to feel about you, too.
I love school visits. School visits are, you know, they for book one, they were the highlight of that year, which was going to across the country, traveling into different schools, talking to, you know, third graders, fourth graders, all the way up to eighth graders and ninth graders. Talking to them not only about Tristan specifically, but also about writing, you know, talking to aspiring writers. And it was, you know, one of the best things that I would see is someone would ask me a question about, you know, the writing process or, you know, ideas about writing. And I would answer it. And then you would see, like, the light bulb click in their head, and they would dash off. They couldn't wait to go start writing again. And that's what was incredible for me when I was, so I miss it. I absolutely miss it. I want us to be safe. I want us to get out of this safely. But as soon as we are out, I'm back on the road and I'm talking to children again.
Because to see that the way kids smile and the joy on their faces, it makes it, everything just brings it to another level. And that's what is writing is about, finding that joy on paper and sharing that joy. And I want everybody, really, they have to get, I think everybody should get your books. They're wonderful, and not just for kids. I really don't think they're just for kids, because there's a universality about these stories. And so, Kwame, what's your website? Tell people.
You can find me. My website is KwameMbalia.com, just my first name and my last name.com. And from there, you can find me. I'm probably on Twitter way too much, but I have links to my Twitter account on my website. Just go to my website, and you will access the world of Kwame Mbalia.
Just type in Tristan Strong. What a great name you came out with! I mean, this was also very clever.
And I love the name Tristan Strong because, as we see in the first book, Tristan feels like he doesn't live up to his name. He doesn't feel strong. And it's great because you had that literal hook for young readers to kind of latch on to say he's strong, but he doesn't feel strong. And then instantly there, we have an obstacle for Tristan to overcome.
Exactly. Now tell us one more time about A Call for Joy and what you're asking people to do. And I hope that you will get so many submissions. So tell us about this project.
A Call for Joy, that is our call. I am editing a middle grade anthology called Black Boy Joy. And we are looking for unagented, unpublished writers. So we're looking for new writers. We want to help them break into the publishing industry, just for black male and black non-binary writers. Submit a short story. You'll find the details on that page on my website, A Call for Joy at KwameMbalia.com. And you'll get a chance. We're picking two winners. You will get paid and you will get published alongside some literary greats in this middle grade anthology.
Well, I think it's what you're doing is wonderful. When I was young, we were very poor, and I learned to read with comic books because that's all we could afford. And we didn't have anything like this. And I'm so happy that young people have all of this wonderful, wonderful work being done as part of the Rick Riordan and Disney have put together to encourage children to read. And they need it now. They need to be strong. It's so hard for them right now.
Absolutely. This is an unprecedented time we're in. And so anything that allows, everyone, we say the middle grade readers, the 9-year-olds to the 12-year-olds, but really everyone who can enjoy a good adventure. All we want, right now, all I want is to provide them a little escapism, let them travel with Tristan on his journey.
And then we can, do we want to do Sweet Peaches as a going out song, Ed?
Do it. Let's do it.
Let's do Sweet Peaches. Okay. It's been in my head now for days and days, and I'm going, I keep doing it. Now this is, you're going to have to start doing this when you go out, because once you get it in your head, and people have to read the books to find out what Sweet Peaches means. That's one reason why you have to get this book, because you are wonderful, Kwame. It's been an honor, really, to talk to you. I'm looking forward to book three, okay?
Listen, as soon as I turn it in, and we'll send you a copy.
Okay, well, Sweet Peaches, and we're saying bye-bye to Kwame now. Thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper. Get this book,
everybody.
Thank you
for having me.
Okay, bye-bye.
Some of them want to use you. Some of them want to get used by you. Some of them want to abuse you. Some of them want to be abused.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author? An artist? an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
It's Patsy with a Z. Oh, and I am back. And it was so much fun talking to Kwame about his wonderful book. And I really want to recommend, if you know any young people, this series. It's a new series called Tristan Strong. It is a wonderful series for kids and well worth buying and giving as gifts. And, of course, I don't know, give libraries now. I don't even know if libraries are open. But find somebody to buy this book for if you're not, and maybe read it first yourself, because it is funny. He's got some really funny things in there. Okay. Wow. Now I'm moving to a much calmer book. I have to calm down because I was really excited at talking to Kwame about his books, because this next book, actually, as I was reading it, I found I was growing very calm, which was very nice because, well, nowadays people are not as calm as we used to be. And so I am really happy to welcome to the program Barbara Mahoney. I think I pronounced it right.
You pronounced it beautifully. Various relatives pronounce it various ways, but Mahoney is fine. Mahaney is what I usually say.
Mahaney. Okay. Yeah. Well, Mahaney.
I like it your way better, so we could just change it.
Okay. I get, you know, sometimes I get myself in such trouble. Sometimes I see a French name, so I try to pronounce it very French, and
right.
then they tell me, oh, no, I'm American. Yeah, do it. So,
right. I think my dad might have been the one who changed the pronunciation to a more American Mahaney rather than an Irish Mahaney.
Yeah.
I think that's how the story goes.
It could be because I went I lived in Europe for a long time, and so I think I've seen this because it's a different spelling. When people are looking you up, they should know it's spelled, it really, the easy way, Mahany, without that E in between.
Exactly, yeah. exactly.
So, as I was saying, I have to calm down now because I had a really exciting time with talking, about a book that a kids series, which is very mm-hmm. exciting. But as I was reading your book, which is called mm-hmm. The Stillness of Winter, Sacred mm-hmm. Blessings of the Season, and I know where I was when I was reading it. It's funny, mm-hmm. I had not been out for a long time, you know, like going to a restaurant or any place, you know, like any of us. But for some reason, I could not stay in the house anymore. I just had to get out. And I wanted mm-hmm. a cup of coffee mm-hmm. in a real cup. I mean, I wanted
ceramic.
Yeah, I didn't want any. And I went to a restaurant uh-huh. and they have real cups. I love those white porcelain cups. There's nothing like them.
The diner cups. I know exactly what you mean.
Uh-huh. And I'm sitting there and I'm reading this book. It's not a very I don't know how many pages, the total page, I have to look here.
200 and
yeah, yeah, it's not,
see,
it's not
two,
and,
yeah,
know,
a little over 223, yeah, yeah, I think, is the last numbered page. Maybe 224 is the last numbered page.
Exactly. And I'm, you know, for me, that's a very short book, I guess. And I needed that time just with this cup of coffee and your book, and I'm sitting there, and I didn't know what actually to expect.
Mm-hmm.
And wow, it just sort of, I found myself growing calm as I'm reading it.
That's beautiful.
I love the way you've written it. It's so friendly.
It's a
friendly
I wanted to be your companion.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's a friendly little book. Mm-hmm. And I thought, and I felt myself growing calm because you've written it in a way, a combination of things like notes and it's just little things. And of course, recipes. And I sort of stop at recipes. Like, yes, I like that. And, you know, tell us about how you got the idea for the book and the importance that, now, of course, this, for me, winter, I come from Upper Michigan.
I know, And you're born in winter, too, right?
Oh, and I was born in a blizzard.
In a blizzard. I figured that was winter when I read that you were born in a blizzard.
Yeah. And actually, the doctor came in on snowshoes. And
gracious.
And he got stuck there overnight. He couldn't get out again. So for me, winter always was very important for us.
Uh-huh.
We got a lot of it. But we didn't mind because for us, of course, it was a time to read. And of course, cooking and all of that. So there's so many things in this book. And I thought, whoa, it was like reading notes from a friend, from somebody you know, a family friend. And tell us how you came out with this idea.
Well, this book, The Stillness of Winter, is my fourth book. And my very first book was a book that came out in 2014 titled Slowing Time, Seeing the Sacred Outside Your Kitchen Door. And Slowing Time was the architecture, as it were, of Slowing Time was it was arranged by seasons. And in fact, there were five seasons in Slowing Time. It began with winter at the start of the year, and it spiraled through all the seasons back to winter once again. Winter, the season of deepening, which is, or the season of stillness, which is, you know, the end of the year, the December month of the year. So that was a book that similarly was a collection of essays and a few recipes and blessing calendars particular to each season. So what happened with this book is about a year ago, out of the blue, a brilliant, wonderful woman who was the publisher of Abingdon Press called me and said that Abingdon Press, which is out of Nashville, wanted to make a line of really beautiful gift books. And the book they wanted to begin with, or one of the three books, I think, they wanted to begin with was Slowing Time. And their idea was to simply draw out the winter sections of Slowing Time and, make it an absolutely beautiful book with beautiful designs and, you know, kind of repackage it. Well, I don't just repackage anything. Once she asked me what I thought of the idea, and I said, well, that could be beautiful because I do love winter. As you said, you know, winter for you is a season of reading. It's a contemplative season. And like you, I was born in the depth of winter in January, and I've lived in the northern United States my entire life. I was born in Kentucky, but we lived in Cincinnati, and I've lived in Chicago for a very long time. So winter is a season I relish. I love the stillness. I love the quiet. So when my dear publisher/editor asked me if I would make this book, I just hunkered down, and I worked doggedly, deliciously, and joyously for a couple months. and it happened to be I was working on it in winter. Just interestingly, I finished it. My deadline was March 1st of this year. So I was working on it before anyone in the world really was, you know, paralyzed by this whole COVID pandemic. So I think back to the days I was working on it as days of just sort of an unbridled joy. I was just hunkered at my kitchen table where I always write, where I can keep an eye on the birds in my backyard and my garden. And I filled this book with all these little patchworks of joy. I drew some essays from the original Slowing Time, some of the old favorites, but I have been writing, obviously it's 2020, I've been writing, you know, for years since Slowing Time came out, so I had new essays and meditations I wanted to put in. I wrote a prayer for Christmas morning, which is in this book. My editor loves recipes, so we doubled or quadrupled the number of recipes in here. So this book is arranged by month. It's, you know, December, January, and February, the winter months. And it's within each of those months, there are the meditative essays, sometimes delightful, sometimes quiet, sometimes contemplative. I weave in all kinds of field notes from nature because I'm so captivated by the wonderments of the natural world and its seasonality, the rhythms of the moon and the sun and, you know, the stirrings of the earth. And, of course, there are the recipes from... They're all old family favorites or new family favorites. And these Blessed Be calendars that I love writing. I call them meditative post-its. They're just short little, a short little reading for the morning, literally just a few sentences, you know, with sort of a meditative prompt, just something to think about at the start of the day, to be on the lookout for the sacred all around. And underlying all of this abiding belief I have. So I was a newspaper writer at the Chicago Tribune for 30 years, almost 30 years, just shy of my 30th year anniversary. And I was a feature writer, and I used to write, before I was a newspaper writer, I was a pediatric oncology nurse. So I was drawn as a writer always to really close to the heart kinds of human interest stories. For a few years, I was on an assignment to, I pretty much just embedded myself with various families going through life stages, becoming empty nesters, the birth of a first child, grieving family just after the death of the father, all sorts of stories of telling other people's stories. And I realized during that time that the quiet, humdrum, everyday stories that unfold at my very own house and in most of our lives, most of us aren't living superhero lives. We're living pretty quiet, humble little lives. But there's so much wisdom and beauty that unfolds before us, you know, whether it's taking care of children or parents or neighbors or dear friends or whoever populates our life. I turned my attention to writing these essays from the stories that just unfold, you know, at my own kitchen table. And I write since 2006, for 14 years, I've been writing a blog called Pull Up a Chair. And the idea of Pull Up a Chair is that it's a virtual kitchen table and these quiet little stories unfold. So the book Stillness of Winter has essays, has a collection of those essays. It has the recipes, it has the field notes, and it has the Blessed Be calendars.
Well, it's so funny how when I got the book, it's a very nice production. It's got all these drawings and it's different from, you know, it's not a novel. There was something once I had it in my hand, I think that's what got me, that I just had to get, I didn't want to read it where I was. I wanted, I wanted something special. Aww. And so there aren't a lot at that point when I got the book. There weren't a lot of places open. And and so I went to the Village Inn, and I just got myself in a comfortable booth and sort of scrunched up in the corner. And,
perfect.
And it was like being at your kitchen table, as I said. And I felt so calm, and when I'm reading, I think this is just so good. I didn't suggest, maybe I should have sent an email and asked you, is there something you'd like to read? Would you like to read one of the poems? Will you read something for us?
Yeah, I would love to. I just did a little reading the other day, and I was looking through to decide what to read. So I'm going to pick something not from December. This is from the January section. Let me see if I should read the whole. Can I read a whole essay? It's called Prayer Beads for a New Year.
I think I would love it. You can read. Why not? That's what we're here for.
So here we go. Prayer Beads for a New Year. Tucked under the covers with a thermometer poking out of your spout is no way to start the new year. But so it is. And so I type from horizontal perspective. And so this new chunk of time has only one direction to go from here, up. As I lie and watch out the window, catching a flash of scarlet here, the squawk of blue jays there, I ponder one or two of those lists we're supposed to make this time of year. I can't quite enumerate the things I hope and pray for. After all these years, I've boiled it all down to one more or less all-purpose petition. Dear God, make me live and breathe your gentle, radiant love. Let me swallow the urge to be unkind, to rebuff the sharp elbow, to turn the other way when insults hurled my way. Let me practice the zen of road kindness, refusing to blow the horn, to cut in front, not wait my turn. Let me search for and offer the benefit of the doubt. Let me try harder, not to roll my eyes. These are the sins of the everyday, the little molehills that make for mountains, for a continent-wide topography of pain, of bitterness, the sharp and invisible line dividing us from them that makes enemies of those whose stories we never stop to listen to. Let us traffic in tiny knots of kindness. Exercise empathy. Imagine how it feels to hurt so much, to be pushed aside, to be left alone on the side of the playground and never find a friend. Imagine never letting go of that hurt. Imagine what would happen if one morning you woke up and found yourself inside a life where self-absorbed ego had utterly vanished, where extreme and all-consuming navel-gazing screeched to a halt, where we looked beyond the borders of our own thin skin, where someone noticed the glimmer in your eye had dimmed. Imagine if someone quietly inquired, "Are you all right? Did someone hurt you?" Imagine a world where we listened instead of trying to talk over each other. Imagine if the ones who take up all the oxygen in the room realize there are others with thoughts to offer. Imagine those rare few souls who live to scatter sunshine, who make us laugh till our bellies ache. Imagine the miracle of the ones who always think two steps ahead, anticipate our hurt, offer tender, loving comfort without falderal or trumpet. Imagine the quietude of saints who walk among us. Practice, practice, practice. Forgive yourself on the days when your brokenness shows. Forgive your stumbles. Say, "I'm sorry." Say it to yourself. And just as emphatically, consider a litany of bees. Be curious, be imaginative, be not afraid to dabble in whimsy, be willing to put yourself out there, be humble, so humble. Carve out time each and every day to plug into the immense wonder of the heavens and the earth. Traipse a meadow, a prairie, sandy dunes. Follow a trail into the woods, count the stars. Realize how small you are against the infinite canvas of the sky. Seek wisdom, not simply from picture shows or airwaves, but in the pages of texts, ancient and otherwise, pulled from bookshelves. D. deep dive inside a poem, make a friend in an unlikely place, reach beyond your borders, make peace. These are the prayer beads I carry into this new year. These are the petitions I press against my heart. This is how I walk into this new year once I get up and out from under the blankets and the NyQuil. And then I end it with a question. What petitions might you bring to this new year?
Wow. See? Oh, this is wonderful. Was that not clever of me to ask you to read? Because you have just done a fantastic reading here.
Thank you. On the spur of the moment, too. Good thing I had my little... One thing I love about this book that I was so delighted and I didn't know till they arrived in a box on my doorstep was the publisher put a ribbon, you know, one of those beautiful, like, prayer book kind of ribbons that are so unheard of in book publishing these days. So I happened to have the ribbon in... tucked on that page, so I was able to find that quickly. Even with no notice, people, please know that we did not plan this ahead of time.
It was meant to be, because of all of the ones that you could read, I think that had so much meaning for me, and I just loved it. And
thank
as you said, I wanted to talk about this ribbon in the book. This is a perfect gift book. It's called The Stillness of Winter, Sacred Blessings of the Season. And Barbara Mahaney, you are a fantastic writer. You have ability to just write little things like this that people will just stop and take a deep breath. Really, it's the kind of book, please get it for yourself. Get it as a gift. Wonderful book if you're going to visit somebody at Thanksgiving. This is a Thanksgiving kind of book that you can give as a gift. Hopefully we can start visiting people at Thanksgiving again. Or just buy for yourself and find yourself a nice cup of coffee with a real cup and just enjoy it, because you have done a wonderful job with this book, and it's been a joy for me to read it. And I love that you use the word joy quite often. Joyous and joy. And it's something that you've discovered on paper and I've discovered it. And we want to share it with all of the people in this world. And so please get this book. And Barbara, thank you so much.
Thank you, dear Patsy. Thank you.
Well, it's wonderful talking to you. Tell everybody your website, where they can find you.
Oh, my blog is pullupachair.org.
That's it.
That's pull up a chair, smushed together in one word. My other, my professional website is barbaramahaney.org.
But just pull up a chair because...
Yeah, pull up a chair is where I want you to go.
Exactly.
Yeah, pull up a chair.
Exactly. Pull
it's
up a chair.
It's a friendly, sacred place. Everyone is kind. Everyone is gentle. Everyone just offers and shares their wisdom and their stories. And it's, you know, I set out to make it sort of a sacred place apart from the cacophonies of the world. And blessedly, for all these years, it has stayed that. And everyone is just civil and beautiful and the way we want the world to be. So
exactly. And we need it at this time, especially. We all need it. So pull up a chair with Barbara and enjoy. And it's been a joy to have you as a guest on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you so much, Patsy. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Whoa.
Take care. Bye.
Okay. Wasn't that fantastic? Am I clever or what? We're hitting it out of the ballpark today, Ed. Ed comes out with the song. I come out with asking her to read. And I've done that sometimes. And people have not been prepared. And then I land up reading. But I couldn't read it with the same kind of feeling that she did. It really is a remarkable book. Beautifully done by Abingdon Press. I mean, they don't do books like this. Nobody does. It's two colors. It's got lots of sketches and drawings. And as she said, lots of great recipes. Maybe I'll have it back in the wintertime. Although we're not going to have any snow here. We're not going to have any snow here in Clearwater. Are we, Ed? No? Do you know they had snow here in 1929? Right where I live. Right on the hill where I live. In 1929.
Actually, I was here for the one in 1978.
Uh-huh.
And then the one in 19... I want to say 86. 6.
Okay, we can live in hope. You never know.
It was just flakes.
Flakes. Yeah. It was flakes. But and it's just wonderful. You did a great job pulling up that song. I think that really gave him a kick because I'm sure he had never thought of it. But that's an expression that one of his characters uses, as to say, sweet peaches. Right. And so that worked out very nicely, Ed. Thank you so much.
Welcome.
Oh, we're on a roll today, Ed. Okay, everybody, go to my webpage. I'm getting more and more content and more things up there, and it's radio-joyonpaper.com. And there's sure to be some one of my interviews that will intrigue you. If you have not started writing, you need to get inspired. Listen, look at her. She gets an idea for a story about winter, and she puts it together. And it's really essays, a little short things, the sayings, blessings. And she's put together an absolutely beautiful book. And you can all do this kind of thing, too. All you have to do is start writing, because National Novel Writing Month is coming up in November. And that's coming very fast. Oh, but before the end of October, I'm going to have Lee Child and Andrew Child here on Joy on Paper on Thursday, October 29th. And I'm very excited about that. I met them first when they came here to the Vinoy Hotel for BoucherCon, where we were all supposed to be last week, but they canceled it. And so I'm really thrilled that they're going to be joining me. And I just want to tell you again, there's quite a few of the writers that I've had on recently have been authors who had put away their books. One author had put away her book for 10 years. Another author had put away her book for 20 years. And they were doing other things, and they just put it all aside, and then they pulled it out and they started again. And or in the case of Kwame Mbalia, he just was told, you know, how about writing some stories about mythology, and he knuckled under and he did it. And you can do it too, because remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing a page a day, and in a year, you will have a book, and a year later, after editing for 12 months, you will be a guest on Joy on Paper. But you'll have joy of editing, because that's also part of the joy of writing. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. He really pulled out all the stops today, and we had a wonderful time here at Joy on Paper. Everybody, have a wonderful weekend. Is it Thursday? It is Thursday. I thought it was Tuesday this morning when I woke up. Anyway, everybody, bye-bye now. Have a great weekend. Bye.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.